So as I mentioned, today is, of course, the solemnity of the Ascension of the Lord. It's really the conclusion of these days of Easter. We have one more week, right, until Pentecost. And so it's not the end of the Easter season. That's in 1 week from now. But it represents a very definitive moment in the life of not just Jesus, of course, of his disciples, but also of the early church. So it's 40 days after Easter was last Thursday, right? And Ascension Thursday is the traditional day that we're supposed to celebrate it. It's a holy day of obligation. And I think to save a lot of people probably from being in mortal sin and not coming to Mass on a holy day of obligation, the bishops moved it to Sunday. So if you live like in the Archdiocese of New York, for example, Jesus has been in heaven since Thursday. But here in Joliet, he goes to heaven on Sunday. So that's just the way that it is. I don't understand. But anyway, kind of a peculiarity there. But when we talk about the Paschal mystery, what's the Paschal mystery? These are these big phrases that we use, and you hear them so much. And sometimes you can hear things so much that you think you know what it means, you know? But we don't really ever stop and say, what is the Paschal mystery? Paschal lamb, Paschal candle, Paschal season. In other languages, in Spanish, for example, instead of Happy Easter, you'd say Felices Pascuas, right? Buona Pasqua in Italian. So this Pasch, P-A-S-C-H, means Easter, or kind of it comes from the word Passover. So the Paschal mystery is not just the suffering of Jesus. Sometimes we think that. The Paschal mystery is the crucifixion and the death of Jesus on the cross. Okay, that's part of it. But the full Paschal mystery, we would say, is the life, the death, the resurrection of Jesus from the dead, and his ascension into heaven. That full picture, the life, the death, the resurrection, and the ascension of Jesus into heaven, is the fullness of the Paschal mystery. And then the fruit of that mystery being lived out is the sending of the Holy Spirit at Pentecost on the apostles and Mary in the upper room. Okay? So you can trace the Paschal mystery this way. That Jesus came to live our life, to die our death, to rise again as the first fruits of our own resurrection, and he ascends into heaven, paving the way for our humanity to be in heaven as well. When Jesus rises into heaven, he doesn't unzip his humanity, and there's like a puddle of human on the floor. He doesn't take it off like clothes and say, this was fun while it lasted, but I am done with this human thing. No, he rises from the dead, and we know from the resurrection accounts with St. Thomas in the upper room that he has holes in his hands and he has marks in his sides. He's in his physical body, right? They think he's a ghost. And to prove that he's not a ghost, he sits down and eats a meal before them, saying, can ghosts sit down and do this? And so to prove to all of you that I'm not a ghost, I eat a lot, just so you all know that I'm not a ghost. I'm doing you a favor by going out to dinner, okay? He's not a ghost. He's really a human in his body, in his humanity. And he goes into heaven in the fullness of his humanity. He takes humanity with him. One professor in the seminary explained it in the simplest way possible, basically by saying Jesus becomes a giant ladle and scoops us out of the deep yogurt of sin and death and raises us up into the dignity of heaven. That's it. Our humanity now has a place in the fullness of God's plan. We're the first crazy people who believe that God would want to become a human. We're the first crazy people who say that God actually did become a human. And we are the first crazy group of people in the history of world religions to say that God desires for us in our lowly humanity to come to him and to live with him. And we're the first crazy people in the history of world religions who say, not only does he desire this humanity, but our humanity is the vehicle by which we can achieve that level of perfection. that by living this life well in our human life, we can have the fulfillment of this life forever. And that's what I want to say to you, is that Jesus spends his life on earth teaching us the method, doesn't he? He teaches us the method. Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. He calls people to himself. He teaches them in an extraordinary ways. He performs miracles for them. He spends time with them. He passes on his vision to them. Then he puts his money where his mouth is, saying, come and follow me, all you who wish to live this abundant life. Take up your cross daily and go with me all the way. St. John the Apostle says he loved them to the end, right? He calls them to go with him all the way to our own crucifixions, taking up our crosses every day, whatever they might be. And then he dies. He is buried. He spends the time in the tomb. And then in the fulfillment of that moment, the grave is opened and the dead rises. And the angels ask them, why are you looking for the living one among the dead? He's not here. He's alive. And Jesus goes and says, this is the new way. This is the new age. And then as kind of the exclamation point on the thing, he says, now I'm going to my Father, to the fulfillment of what you are called to as well. That's beautiful. But he says, I won't leave you orphans. I won't leave you alone. I won't leave you without help. I won't leave you without guidance. Because when I go, I will send you the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of truth, who will teach you everything, who will reveal to you things that still remain hidden. There's so much to tell you, but I can't tell you now. So I will send you the Holy Spirit. Why? What does the Holy Spirit allow us to do? The Holy Spirit is the ignition. The Holy Spirit is the jump starter for the mission of the church. And now that you've observed his life, you've observed his death, you've observed his resurrection, and you know that his power is now living on high in heaven forever, we are called then to go out and to do what he says, to make disciples of all nations and to teach them, as we have learned, that death is conquered and sin is forgiven and sin is not worth it and sin is very boring and death is not something to be feared, but that life in abundance is possible, not just one day, but here and now in this life as a foretaste of the brilliant fullness of life to come. So if you go to Galilee, you will find a site there called Mount Arbel. Mount Arbel is a very high mountain on the edge of the Sea of Galilee. And that is where, at least from Matthew's perspective, Jesus ascends into heaven. There's also a place in Jerusalem that is claimed to be where Jesus ascended into heaven. So maybe he ascended into heaven on Thursday in Jerusalem, and on Sunday he ascended into heaven from Mount Arbel. I'm not sure. But Mount Arbel is one of the most beautiful places ever. From the top of Mount Arbel, you can see, like, everything. You can see, of course, the Sea of Galilee, but you can see way beyond it. You can see up north into the hills of Syria. You can look across the way and look down toward Jerusalem. Can't see Jerusalem, but you can see these beautiful, fertile valleys. You can see kind of where the end of the fertile soil is and the beginning of the desert. You can see very far off in the distance where the Sea of Galilee gets really narrow and becomes the Jordan River, flowing eventually into the Dead Sea, hundreds of miles away. So from Mount Arbel, you can see the world, in a sense. And so he's standing there with them and saying, you see all these nations, you see all these distant places, you see all of this. Now this is your territory, this is your mission territory. Go out and make disciples of all nations. But he told you and I in the first reading how to do it. Did you listen? In the first reading, Jesus says, get doctorates in theology and open up your own universities and tell people your opinions. Wait a minute, I gotta find it. When they had gathered together, they asked him, Lord, are you at this time going to restore the kingdom to Israel? This has to be one of the most annoying questions Jesus has ever been asked. He's died for them. He's risen for them. He's explained to them 1,000 times. He has nothing to do with the kingdom of Israel. He could care less about the worldly kingdom of Israel coming to its greatness again under David, right? He could care less. stop asking me this question. Have I been with you all this time and you still don't get it? No, I'm not going to restore the kingdom to Israel. I'm here to do a different thing, okay? And I'll tell you, as a teacher at the end of the school year, these questions are flowing in great abundance. He answered them, it's not for you to know the times or seasons, but that the Father has established by his own authority. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. He doesn't say, get a doctorate in theology, be my professor. He doesn't say, get a law degree, be my defender. He doesn't say, do this, do that, you know, be my armchair theologian, be my YouTube philosopher. He doesn't say that. He says, be my witnesses. Be my witnesses. Here and there and everywhere. Live as if you know me. Yes, you will fall. Yes, you will fail, but strive always for what is better. Strive always for what is better in imitation of this method that he has given to us. Be his witnesses. At the grocery store, I went to the doctor on Friday, and it's a very long story, but this is my bright blue Band-Aid, which you're probably wondering what that is. And there was a woman there, and she was very upset, and she probably was justifiably upset, but she was really being mean to the receptionist, you know? And I was just standing there, of course, not intervening, because why would I do that? But she was really like letting the lady have, it wasn't her fault, whatever, I don't know. But the lady had this big shiny cross on. And I was just like, ooh, no. That's not a witness. Do you understand? That's not a witness of patience and of gentleness. It's not a witness. If you can't bear it on your back, then don't wear it around your neck. You see? You are called to be his witnesses in a world which does not know him. Christendom is dead. Christian culture is bye-bye. The world does not know him. But you know him, and he knows the Father. And he's sending you the Holy Spirit that you might feel empowered to teach and to preach wherever you are and in your own way. So I want to just fill you with that encouragement. That the fullness of the Paschal Mystery is not some blah, blah, blah thing that you hear about one ear and out the other. The Paschal Mystery is as practical as this thing gets, because you and I are participating now in the Paschal Mystery in the new age with the coming of the Holy Spirit among us to fill you in your everyday life with whatever you need to be able to go out and even at the doctor's office, even downtown Naperville, even at wherever you find yourself, to be a witness to the compassion, to the joy, to the mercy, to the levity, to the communion building, whatever it is that Jesus has asked of you in that moment. You see? So don't think that this is about the disciples. They've had their moment, right? And they've passed it to us. And they intercede for us. And the Holy Spirit fills us with power. But the ones who are called to be witnesses to Judea, to Samaria, to Naperville, and to everywhere, that's us. That's us. No pressure, but that's us. So whether it's Sunday or Thursday or any other day that ends in Y, we're grateful that he's in heaven. We're grateful for the Holy Spirit. But now let's ask that same Holy Spirit to fill us with a knowledge of the power that we have because of our baptism to go out and to preach and to teach in his name.